joining us back on the show once again. So fabulous on Friday, we just decided we'd do it again. Legal and sports business analyst Emily Campagno joins us on KHTK. Hi, Emily. It's Nate and Katie again.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us a little bit earlier today. I'm sorry for the early wake up, but hey, and not a lot of sympathy because we get up at 4 a.m.
Hey. So. Wow.
I'm just putting it in perspective so you feel better about the early wake up.
Emily, no, we didn't have a chance to talk to you on Friday because we got so far into the Lance Armstrong thing that we didn't have a chance to talk to you about Tom Brady. And of course, over the weekend, there was a little bit of a shift. He said that he's not going to have his people pursue the stay of suspension or however you want to put it, but he is going to let the NFLPA take up the charge. Now, it sounds like he's going to just swallow that 4-game suspension. So with that being said, what's the purpose of letting the NFLPA take up this case?
I think it's frankly optics, and at this point, as a citizen, I'm slightly glad to hear that they're not necessarily pursuing the Supreme Court, but I think he's also, as we get into the season and it's coming around the corner, he's demonstrating a focus to the season and the team. I think it's him, again, for optics, basically saying, look, I'm putting this behind me. My union is here to represent me in this capacity. They're acting as my, you know, attorneys, you could say, and therefore I'm going to focus on football, and I'm going to let them do their job.
Well, Emily, isn't the whole issue, if you really look back at this, and I know that it has been such a long, ongoing process with this whole Deflategate saga, but it all comes down to the fact that a lot of the players feel that Roger Goodell has an unnecessary amount of power and can wield it however he wants. So is the appeal allowing the Players Association to kind of continue with this appeal more about trying to address that issue?
That's a great question, and yes. And here's the thing that I would like everyone to know in terms of how the CBA plays into part of this. Remember we talked last time about negotiating a CBA, and I said how both parties have to have concessions and they have all their interests on the table and they have to come to an agreement. So the thing to remember is that any CBA that's in effect has been agreed to by both parties. And the issue here, I mean, there are a few, but what it really boils down to is whether Goodell was technically authorized to serve as or designate the arbiter in these discipline appeals. We know that he was. That's what they agreed to. But the whole point is that that arbiter had this duty to be fair and consistent. He had to be necessarily neutral. And so the players are basically arguing, look, this guy isn't that. He's not necessarily neutral. And he's been making a host of decisions that have impacted us arbitrarily and kind of has done so without precedence and without really laying out this followable procedure or path that we adhere to. But my point is that his actual activity to do that, that was totally agreed upon. So for me, when I see this, I have to say it's a little ironic to me because having dealt with this as a federal attorney, to me, I'm like, well, this is what you all agreed to. Mm-hmm. And I'm not speaking to his neutrality. I'm not speaking to any of that. I'm just saying to the actual legality of this point and now this flag that the NFLPA has taken up, having been a part of these kinds of negotiations for so long, I just have to say that it's a little ironic to me, like I said.
Well, and to that point, they agreed to the terms of this. They basically handed him over this power, and whether or not they were really paying attention like they should have, because it goes back to CBAs and how closely are individual players really paying attention. You've got a select few that kind of speak for everybody, but they're supposed to meet with their entire teams. Your representative for each team is supposed to meet, and they're supposed to be the voice. So to me, a little bit, it's like, okay, they realize now that they made a big mistake, did not pay attention. What kind of recourse do they have now? How can they change this now? Is this suit or this appeal by the Players Association part of that process to making steps in that direction?
I mean, the only thing that would change this at this point now is to renegotiate it. Because the fact that the courts have heard this element of it and have not joined in, like that's the whole point, is that oftentimes, so if you think about this as kind of two tracks, you have the track within the NFL, and then just think about it more globally, like you have your contract between your employers and your employees, right? And it's the system that you have agreed to. And then now these employees are arguing, but wait, they acted outside the system. You know, they acted outside the necessary neutrality. So yes, they technically did, they acted within their bounds, but not in a manner that's consistent. So look, we're arguing against it. So then they take it up and they exhaust the track within the program. And then they go outside of it to say, okay, look, we've exhausted our procedure within this system. So now we need outside help. Mm-hmm. That's what happened. And the outside help didn't come to the rescue. So the outside help basically said, no, you're fine. And quite often, the federal courts do say, oh, you acted out of bounds. In fact, like, for example, many government agencies, including the Social Security Administration, for example, like, frequently gets remanded back to the agency saying, yes, you guys are, you know, you're way out of bounds. Figure this out again. Take it over. Here you go. So it was interesting to me that there was not even a semblance of that happening here. Mm. So my point is that it's not as if the courts are like, yep, oh, we totally saw a problem and you guys have to fix it. They were like, no, it was totally fine. And so for there to actually change Goodell's or the commissioner's ability here, they need to change the actual CDA.
Emily Campagno, sports business and legal analyst with us on The Drive. Emily, so as I try to work this through to the conclusion here, Tom Brady serves a suspension, but the NFLPA moves forward and ultimately wins their case. What is the victory for the union, and what does that mean?
Well, we could see a few different options here. So first of all, as we know, he renegotiated his contract, so he wouldn't lose money on those games, right? So technically, you could argue, well, does he even have recourse for what the loss of that would mean? But it would go back to that. I mean, and I can think about it again or relate it to the listeners in terms of employee-employer relationships and what's the loss suffered, and then that's how you basically argue what's due back. So for him, it's monetary and it's loss of opportunity. So here the damages would be easily proven, obviously, just monetarily. I'm not aware of sponsorships that were retracted or whatever. They could argue loss of jersey sales. You know, the franchise has a lot more argument, frankly, than Brady actually does, but that's what it would boil down to.
Emily, I want to switch gears a little bit with you because there's a lot of stuff going on in the state of North Carolina when it comes to sports in general. Last week, the Board of Governors for the NBA met about potentially moving the 2017 All-Star Game out of North Carolina because of some anti-kind of LGBT laws that were passed by the state legislature. Then on top of that, the Duke-Albany game was canceled after the New York governor canceled all non-state travel to North Carolina. I want to get your take on what's going on there. And I know this happened. The New York governor did this in 2015 also with the state of Indiana. But with everything that is kind of coming to a head after this law that passed in North Carolina, what is the potential for sports franchises to be able to, and you know, not even just franchises, but leagues, to be able to impact state legislation?
Here, I think it's tremendous. And the interesting thing is, I mean, you know, think about what the commissioner, the NBA commissioner said. And he was basically like, look, it's easy to say we're moving it, but we feel there's a constructive role for the league to play. And if we announce that we're moving it, what's the incentive to change, right? So I feel like there's kind of twofold large possibility to impact, to answer your question. There's number one, just that fact of, look, this game brings millions to the host city and all of the exposure and the actual direct financial impact there. But then there's also that kind of leveraging the platform that these leagues have to impact law specifically, that these guys can start that conversation to the point where these host cities and these host states will actually change things. And I think it kind of goes back to the larger national conversation of what leverage these athletes have in general and these leagues have. And it started to me a little while ago with, I think, that kind of spotlight with the domestic violence issues. And I think there's been a shift in public perception where prior to this, I think a lot of times perception was, look, they're athletes. Like, we see them as a uniform, not necessarily as a person. And then that's been shifted to, you have so much leverage. You have so many youths that are looking up to you or others that are looking up to you. You can actually be models of behavior. And then it's now become kind of a, you can use that as leverage for whatever cause that you are supporting and supporting. You can have this national conversation be of a much larger impact.
The other side too, Emily, I just, you know, I can't believe I'm like standing on this side of it, but does a state like North Carolina in this case have any recourse against someone like, say, the NBA or I don't know, the state of New York, who's basically saying, dude, we're taking money out of your pockets over this bill that you guys passed? You know, the NBA, I guess in this case, had an agreement with Charlotte. And again, they're going to cost them money. So can the state do anything in this situation?
Absolutely. So, you know, remember, it always goes back to the contract. And here, if they feel that the contract was broken, then they can absolutely have recourse. And that's the kind of thing where here it might be a little easier because oftentimes you're not sure, like, well, is it worth it to go after this? And is it worth how much money we're going to spend in courts and whatever? But here, given the financial incentive for these host cities to have these all-star games and on all those kinds of events, it would absolutely behoove them. And the thing is, I'm sure in the contract, there's probably not a clause for, like, as long as we agree with your principles, you know? But part of this conversation, too, about these laws, these specific set of laws in general, is how it goes to the heart of the constitutionality of them. So you then on the flip side, you can argue, well, this might be a slam dunk because if we feel that, our constitutional rights are being violated, then, of course, as employees, we should not be expected to be playing here, and as a league, we should not be expected to participate here. You know, it can kind of boil down to that level, and then the counter again is almost kind of Olympic style, where, well, this isn't, no one's forcing you. This was a voluntary contract that you agreed to, so therefore you kind of surrendered in a way any argument you had over, like, well, we didn't like the climate there. So, I mean, you know, you can see that it goes back and forth. But in terms of legally, you know, you cannot just get out of contract. You can't just break a contract for no reason. So absolutely, especially if at the time that they signed these laws were in effect, then that makes it, interestingly, a slam dunk in the other direction.
So aside then, like, from the PR standpoint of stepping up and taking a stand, sounds like the NBA is calling North Carolina's bluff a little bit, saying, man, fine, take us to court over this if you really want to. We don't think that this law is constitutional.
Right, they can argue that. Although, and then on the other side, I feel like there's been a lot of talk about, like, look, well, we just wanted to start this conversation. So on both sides. And then note, too, I think a lot of us who are in the sports industry, obviously it's our world and we love it, of course, but at the end of the day, this is a really emotional issue. And for the states that have taken certain proactive steps in this direction, like North Carolina, think of them as being like, we don't care. Like, you think we care about this? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This meaning the all-star game coming in. Like, we don't care. Go ahead. These are our rights. This is our youth. These are our kids in the public school system. You know, this kind of this really heightened sense of emotion behind these set of laws, I think it's also to note here, because it's not just, I don't think they'll just turn over and take it, if that makes sense.
Well, Emily, earlier you mentioned the constitutional component of this argument, which I feel is very compelling, but you also mentioned it was a voluntary contract that they entered into with the state of North Carolina to host the All-Star Game. However, do they have any kind of leverage, they being the NBA, in the fact that this law was passed after that contract was signed?
Yeah, and I said that earlier, kind of the inverse, that yes, they could say, well, circumstances have changed. And so there are certain things. Think of the contract as this, kind of thing in the sky, and it's like it's the end-all, be-all. But then there are certain things that can affect it or render it invalid. So if you say, you know, look, circumstances have changed and it makes it illegal for us to play there, or circumstances have changed and so you cannot fulfill your end, or I cannot fulfill my end, et cetera, then it's rendered invalid. But usually portions of contract, and usually 99.9999% of the time, certain clauses, just because part of it is rendered invalid, doesn't make the whole thing invalid.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't read their contracts between each other, I have to admit, but I would say that it is pretty ironclad, and I would be very surprised if there was some type of, political climate that was written into it that would be an easy out. And maybe that's my larger point here, is that it would not be a clean break and from the NBA's perspective.
Emily Campagna, Sorry about that, Emily. Kind enough to join us. She's now become our Joe DiMaggio of great legal interviews here on KHDK.
You very quickly became our go-to. We just enjoy you so much.
I love that, you guys. I'm here anytime. I'm seriously happy to come on anytime. And as I'm speaking, I'm like, I hope this is making sense. So I really hope it does. And I welcome any more questions that you have because, you know, please do let me know if I can be any more clear.
Hey, if you make sense to me and I am in no way like a legal personality or really, I mean, gosh, I've seen CSI and Law and Order. So that's about my extent of it right there. So if it's making sense to me, I'm hoping that that's, you know, transferring over to our listeners. So thank you, Emily, so much for joining us again today.
Thanks, you guys. I'll talk to you soon.
And thanks, Emily. Emily Compagno, find her on Twitter at @CompagN and the number 0. @ Compagno, legal sports business analyst. And just great for us. I mean, it's interesting all the various facets to that whole situation where you're talking about, you know, whether it's, I guess, the North Carolina situation. To me, I see the NBA as much as anything calling their bluff and saying, really, I mean, you know, do your best. We don't think you have a leg to stand on.
Well, gosh, she made some really good points about how are they, being the NBA, supposed to come in here and tell us how to set our laws and determine our laws for our children, for our communities, for our state. They should have no right. I mean, I get the argument.
The answer for me is that they're not. They're just not doing business with
you. Yeah, exactly. But the game has already been scheduled to be there. And then on the flip side, which, you know, in the next segment, I really want to ask Scott Howard Cooper this question. If they do decide not to hold the All-Star game there in February, and it's really not that far away, what are they going to do? Like, how quickly can they award and determine who's going to host the games, and what kind of a situation does that put that host city in to be able to accommodate the change on such a quick turnaround?
So we did the legal part. We'll talk with the NBA guy. Have that, plus Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, all kinds of things to talk with Scott Howard Cooper about. That's all coming up when we return on The Drive, Sacramento Sports Station, Sports 1140 KHTK.